This is Real Estate Rookie episode 389er. Should you buy a haunted house as an investment? That's a rookie reply question, but I also had to ask Tony that same question weeks ago. Who do you get to help design your renovations? We'll get into all of that today. My name is Ashley Kerr, and I'm here with Tony J. Robinson.
And welcome to the Real Estate Rookie Podcast, where every week, three times a week, we bring you the inspiration, motivation, and stories you need to hear to kickstart your investing journey. So today, we're going to get into how to manage a short-term rental from over 2,000 miles away and how to snag a great property manager for your long-term rental. We'll answer the question, does having a relationship with a big bank really help me as a rookie investor? But first, let's get to Ashley's question about, should you be buying a haunted house? Is it actually a good investment? All right, so question number one today comes from Kenneth Clark. And Kenneth says, there's a house for sale on the other side of town that's known locally to be very haunted. It's been abandoned for at least 10 years and it's up for sale right now. It's a four suite building and just needs some cosmetic upgrades. And it used to be a hostel decades ago. So question is, do you rent it out and embellish the apparent history around it? Or do you ignore the stories and treat it like any other investment? Or do you just pass because ghosts scare you? So Ash, I know you've been looking at some haunted properties out there in New York as well. So what's your take for Kenneth here?
I mean, you make it sound like that's my buy box is looking for haunted houses. That is not true. I came upon a haunted house. So with this property, it has been known in our town to be haunted. I swear that when I was younger, we went there on a field trip and walked there from our school. And they like sat us down in the old bar restaurant and told us the ghost stories or whatever, this girl that would be in the bathroom or something. And so if you do a Google search, there's like a couple things you can find it on it or whatever. I was like, okay, it's been on market for a year. Let's just go and look at it. And so ran the numbers, made an offer, seller financing, and it's under contract right now. So to kind of answer some of these questions. When I first saw the property, I asked Tony, I said, should I buy a haunted house? And Tony, what was your answer?
I was like, yeah, hype it up, put it on Airbnb, make it a whole experience, you know?
Exactly. So Tony may have a different answer for you, Kenneth, than me. I am just going to run it as a normal long-term rental. And then there's one commercial unit in it that I haven't decided what I'm going to do with it yet. So in this case, it sounds like you have a similar, it's a four unit building and needs cosmetic upgrades. So mine's going to need cosmetic too, just like flooring, paint, things like that in the apartments. And then do you rent it and embellish apparently the history around it? So here's what I would say. I would run the numbers doing both. So if you plan on embellishing it, and especially it's yours has been vacant for 10 years, the one I'm purchasing has had people living in it. So I know that it's not scaring away long-term renters, but if you are not sure if you can get someone to actually live in there, then you may have to go with the short-term rental side. So I'd run the numbers on both scenarios and see how that can play out. I did do a little research on haunted houses as short-term rentals, and it actually does seem to be like there is a very good niche of customers for that. Tony, have you come across that at all?
It wasn't even haunted, but the only house that I had that kind of had that same appeal was I tried to buy the house from Stranger Things. But there was so much demand that like I literally called the agent every day for like a week, and it was just going straight to voicemail, and his voicemail was full. That's the only experience I have, but I haven't looked at anything that's like actually haunted.
Yeah, so I would say run the numbers on both and see what pans out better and try it that way, but make sure you have that second strategy as an exit strategy in case the first one doesn't work out. And then the last thing he said, or do you pass on it because ghosts scare you? So in my situation, I presented this to my one partner who's been looking for a deal, wanting to get into a deal. So I said, I have this one, but I think it's haunted. A lot of people say it's haunted. And he goes to me and says, ghosts aren't real. So if you have at least one partner who isn't scared, then they can be the one to go into the property if any abnormal things happen and try to take care of the situation or whatever that may be. Yeah. So that is kind of my safety net in this scenario, is to like, okay, if something happens and I get scared, I'm not going there anymore. If for some reason we ever need to set foot on the property, you will be the one to go. So
the new Ghostbusters movie is coming out soon. So this question is very, very, very timely. But I think I go with Ashley's advice too, right? Is like, what do the numbers say works better? And if you can maybe identify that as a short term kind of playing into this theme, it actually crushes, then yeah, you know, maybe it does make more sense to go that route. But if maybe your area isn't really big on travel and tourism, if there's really nothing in your market that will pull anyone in there, maybe it's a smaller town, then maybe not. But yeah, I'd say let the numbers decide for you, Kenneth. And, you know, worst case, you could always, you know, say you buy it, and you maybe just like redevelop it, right? So you do maybe a more extensive rehab to where people don't even realize it's that old same building. That's an option as well. We had Donovan Adesero. He was doing ground up development in Texas, and he would buy stuff that needed like, you know, cosmetic upgrades, whatever it was as well. But he would just tear it down and do new development of a higher use structure than what was there before. So that's always an option too, if the numbers make sense going that route, Kenneth. So let the data tell you what the best route is. I myself, I like the idea of a haunted house in my portfolio, but that's just me.
That's also, Tony, that would be you getting shiny object syndrome of going off of your beam path.
That's true.
Okay, so we're going to get into our next question from Thomas O'Donnell. We love to talk about doing renovations when purchasing a property to add equity. However, I feel like the one question nobody really asks is who comes up with the designs for the renovation, such as paint colors, types of fixtures, wood types, etc. I would love to attack a fix and hold. However, I'm stuck on the design of how I would imagine it looking as though it is not my expertise. Is this something a GC comes up with, or do you hire a designer? So Tony, let's first talk about short-term rentals with you. What do you do in your scenario? Are you like a feng shui person that has to put different things in different places, or are you hiring this out? And is that the right word? Feng shui?
Feng shui. Close enough. It's definitely different, I think, for like traditional flips, traditional long-term rentals and the short-term. Short-term's kind of like its own beast. When we design a short-term rental, We're not only looking at other listings in the market, but we're also trying to identify how can we separate ourselves from a design perspective. And we spend a decent amount of time up front trying to make sure that our property, we call it stopping the scroll, right? So my interior designer, Brianna Michelle, she's done majority of our properties for us. She's really good at working with Sarah to try and identify these designs that as you're scrolling through Airbnb, we've got a design that's going to kind of catch your attention and get you to click through to our listing. So that comes down to, you know, having really cool wallpaper, having these different Instagrammable moments where it's maybe, I don't know, we have so many different things at our different properties that, you know, we get people taking photos of. It's maybe the hot tub outside. We have a soaking tub at one of our properties outside, the pool that we just put in at one of our properties with the cool slide and the water jet. So I think as you're putting your property together, you just want to look for those moments that get people excited. Now, how do you come up with that, right? Because that's the crux of this question here, Thomas, is how do you come up with that design? Look at other popular listings, both in your market and in other markets, and just pull inspiration from there, right? Let the properties that are already successful tell you what it is that people are willing to pay for in that market. And then you can try and source the actual design materials yourself. If you're unsure of how to do that, you can hire a designer. But for me, we leverage a lot of what other folks have proven to be popular in that market, dictate what we do.
I think the first piece of advice you said was you look at the comparables goes across the board for all strategies, mm-hmm. as to you should be looking at what the competition is doing. So if for a long-term rental, do you need to have granite countertops in your rental? Like, is every listing out there have granite countertops? And if you don't have granite, nobody's going to want to live in your unit because for $100 more, they could have granite or maybe not even that much money more. So looking at what are some of the standard finishes, or maybe you're thinking of doing granite and you're looking at the comparables and nobody else has granite in their rentals, and you realize you can't even charge that much more because nobody's willing to pay in that market. There's just a cap on what they will pay in price for a rental, mm-hmm. and you can't get your money's worth if you upgrade to those different things. And that can be a hard thing to do, is really like that gray area of like, how above and beyond do you want to go as to what the market actually commands in that area. And the same goes for a flip. You want to look at what the comparables are selling for and what you need to have done in them. So first looking at the comparables, and then leaning on your contractor. I use a contractor that's also an investor. And part of the process that we do is he picks most of the finishes, as to he'll tell me, I want to use this paint color. And then I say yes or no. And most of the time he's literally referring to another project he did for me. He'll say, this is what I think for paint. This is what I think for flooring. What do you think? It's the same one I did in this house. And I'll say yes, or, you know, maybe I'll say, let's try something different. But for my rentals, I really, really like to stick to the same exact finishes so that it's consistent. You know, if there is an issue with something, I can just say, well, this is the paint color we use. And it just goes across the board. And then even for light fixtures, my contractor picks out all of the light fixtures. I don't do any of that at all. So being able to lean on your contractor, if he is also an investor, knowing what's kind of the market commands and also what is a good price too for your property. Like, you're getting a good value. You don't want to pay $400 for a light fixture for a rental that's going to rent for $600 per month too.
Yeah, I love that concept, Ash, of having just like a standard set of materials that you're able to reuse throughout your properties. And we don't necessarily have that luxury when we're doing the short term. So yeah, like, we just had to replace, like, we had to like cut out a piece of flooring at one of our properties last week. And we had to like look, okay, what flooring did we buy for this specific property? Because it's different than a lot of the other listings.
I just want to say along those lines, Tony, we do for every unit that we do a turnover for, we do a unit information sheet that lists the paint color, the flooring brand, the flooring color, like any finish we can think of, like, we add it into there as to where we bought it from, what is the name of it, and what the color is of it too. And then we store that in our property management software under the unit as a resource too.
Super smart. We do have like a sheet that we build out when we're doing the rehab of like what we're buying, but we just never really save it anywhere. Mostly Sarah, because she's the one that's in charge of that. But I like that idea of storing it like in your property management software.
Yeah. And we do it at the end too, so that if anything changes along the way, we have the finished project that, you know, that goes through.
I just interviewed James Daynard, who's co-host of the On a Market podcast, probably the biggest flipper that I know in this business. And he talked through his process for coming up with his scope of work, which is basically what you're asking here, Thomas. Is like, hey, how do I choose the fixtures, the flooring type, et cetera? And what James explained in that episode, I thought was super, super smart. He said that before he even submits an offer on a property to flip, he's already identified all of the comparable listings in that market that he's trying to match. And he literally prints out photos of those comparable listings. And then when he goes to walk the property that he's looking to purchase, he has the photos of the flip comparables with him. And he's literally building out his scope of work to compare the property he's walking to against the photos of those comparable listings. So he's got his comps that are really helping him build out his scope of work, but it's smart because he's literally building it out as he's walking through the property. So he can look at his living room, look at the photos of the living room and the comps and see, okay, what's missing? What do I need to change? Okay, we have, you know, 1.5-inch baseboards, they have 3.5. We have no recessed lights, they have 6, you know, 2-inch can lights. You know, we've got carpet, they've got LVP, whatever it is, but it's easier to build that out if you have the comps with you as you're walking through your property.
We're going to take a short break before we get to the next question, but we're going to talk about picking a property manager in a competitive market. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
Are current interest rates making you depressed about cash flow? What if it didn't have to be that way? Rent to Retirement has 2.99% seller financing available on turnkey properties. You heard that right. That's a seller financed 2.99% interest rate where the average cash flow is over $900 per month. They also have options where you can put as low as 5% down on multiple investment properties with no PMI. Rent to Retirement is the nation's leading turnkey investment company that understands what it takes to be successful in today's dynamic real estate market. Their reputation speaks for itself with more five-star reviews than any other company on the BiggerPockets website. Rent to Retirement offers fully turnkey properties that are newly built or renovated, leased and managed, allowing you to invest with confidence in the markets that offer the best returns. To learn more, visit renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com. Or text REI to 33777. Again, text REI to 33777.
Remember when you had to pay to get a lead's phone number? It was like the dark ages. Until Deal Machine made skip tracing a thing of the past. Now, with your Deal Machine plan, you'll get unlimited access to phone numbers and contact information for no extra cost. That's right, get high quality, reliable information trusted by leading financial institutions, all fully compliant with the federal Do Not Call list. Explore over 150 data points, including age, gender, marital status, occupation, and a ton more. Trust me, this is the data you need for off-market deals. With new filters, people flags, and color-coded phone numbers, lead management just got a ton easier. Ready to step up your investing game? Sign up for a Deal Machine plan today and gain immediate access to this unlimited treasure trove of contact information and phone numbers. Just head to dealmachine.com/BP. Transform your lead generation and deal-making strategies with Deal Machine. Sign up today and start exploring the unlimited possibilities at dealmachine.com/BP.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, guys, we're back from break. And coming up, we have converting a long-term rental to a shorter duration stay while you're 2,000 miles away and how that can actually be possible to do. But first, we're going to talk about how do I pick a property manager and bring value to them? So this question is from Richard B. With so much competition these days, what qualities should an investor have to gain the business of a property manager? At least the very best property manager in an area, what value can an investor bring to them? I just see so much about vetting and choosing the best property manager or anyone in the real estate world, but not a lot about what value to bring to them. Thank you. So it's easy. You don't communicate with them. You just let them run the thing and you don't ask a million questions and you trust them.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. You're right, Richard. It is a question that I don't think gets posed a lot. But I think the reason why is because, I mean, most property managers are looking to grow their business, right? Obviously, there's some truth in what Ashley said, but if you're having a hard time getting a property manager to take you on, then it might be that they're just not the right property manager for you, right? Like, I remember when I bought my very first long-term rental, I think I researched in my market. And I was able to identify five or six different property management companies. And I emailed all of them first. I said, hey, my name is Tony Robinson. I'm a new investor in your town. I'm looking to buy probably two or three properties over the next year. Had some questions about your services, XYZ. I shot that off and I only got responses from like half of those people, right? And then when I reached back out to maybe set like an in-person meeting, I think only two of those three actually replied. So just even by like reaching out and trying to test them that way, you're going to identify who's a good fit for you. So if you find yourself chasing someone, Richard, then maybe it's a sign that they're not even going to do that great of a job once you become a client of theirs. So I think I would even question like what makes you feel that you have anything to prove as a real estate investor when you're reaching out to the property managers.
And I think this could go along too with a lot of other team members, such as an agent or a lender too, that if they already have your business, that there's not really value to bring. If you're trying to network because you want them to bring you deals or that you eventually want to use the lender. But as far as like once you already have their business or once they already have your business, there's not a lot of value brought to you. But in these circumstances, as to ways you actually can provide value is being a good client. So if they ask you something, ask for documentation, ask for your, you know, your permission to spend $500 on a plumbing repair. Being prompt in your responses can be a great way that your property manager or any of your team members will definitely appreciate you as a client, the fact that you are responding to them and kind of, you know, keeping things rolling, because it puts more of a burden on them when they don't have answers from you and they have to put a halt on things. And then the resident is complaining because it's not being taken care of. So being able to make decisions in a timely manner can be a way that you can provide a beneficial relationship and bring value to your property manager.
Yeah. Ash, let me ask you, right? Because you do a little bit of property management outside of your own portfolio as well. You've worked with property managers in the past. And maybe this the answer is what you just said, but I guess what, in your mind as a property manager, what is the ideal client? Is it the person that you never hear from and they're just kind of super, super passive and they let you really take control? Or do you actually appreciate maybe the owner who wants to be somewhat involved? Like, how do you draw that line?
So I only manage for people that I'm already partners with. And I really like it because I have full control and say into the situations. Like, we just had a situation where the one owner of one of the properties said that he was going to get a new roof, but didn't tell me, and went and got it quoted out, and he bartered with the guy or whatever. And, you know, I had this experience of other properties the same contractor did where it did not go well. And now the owner, you know, involving himself without consulting me or my maintenance team kind of put a pain point on this issue. So, like, if I had to choose, it would be somebody who gives up control and trusts the process, but also is going to spend the money on those capital improvements, but also as me, as the asset manager, that I'm going to also make sure that I am budgeting their money and trust me in that too, as to I'm not going to automatically say, let's do this, this, and this because it needs to be done. I am actually taking the time to go through the year and as to, like, okay, we need to do this. When is the best time that we can do this? Or let's make sure this property is saving up money and then we're going to do it. Where a lot of property managers, they're not doing that. They're just seeing. So the best client is yourself, because you care the most about your own properties. And that's why I will never take on any outside, you know, owners, just my partners, because they let me have full control and make the decisions. But I don't think that I have the patience or the mindset to actually deal with owners.
Yeah. And we've been looking at launching like a short-term rental property management company for a while. And part of my hesitation has been exactly what you said, is that when you take on management, you're in between a rock and a hard place, because you have to keep your tenants or your guests happy in the short-term rental space. You also have to keep the owners happy. And sometimes it kind of feels like it's a losing battle. So for me, I don't really want to launch our co-hosting business, Aravato, until I found the right COO, because now that person's going to be the one that's going to be really, you know, dealing with most of that. So I do think that there's some balancing there for sure, Ash, about like, how do you make sure that you're doing both? I guess let me ask this one question, right? So if you go back to like your initial dates of property management, but you're only working for one owner, right? You're just managing his whole portfolio. Was it multiple? Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So slightly different. All right. Never mind. Cause it was a slightly different situation.
Well, maybe I could still give you what I would do.
I guess, you know, I'm just curious, right? Like how did you balance between what the owner's motivations were? Or like, did you ever find yourself at odds between like, hey, here's what the right thing is for the tenant, but here's what the owner would prefer for me to do? And like, how did you square those two things?
Yeah. And really, I think that is just like a huge pain point of why I wouldn't want to do it, because the landlord or the owner of the property may have different motives. And that communication, I think, is so important, that you let your property manager know, this is my intent, these are my motives. Like, if you tell your property manager, like, I just want to milk as much money out of this and then I'm selling it in 2 years, I don't want to do any improvements or anything, like, they know up front. But I think that as far as trying to navigate that, the best thing is the clear communication and staying aligned. And when I had a third party property management company, that was not the case of us being aligned as to what our goals were. For me, I will say, you know what? pay the $200 to have that fixed, where my maintenance guy may be, I think that she did it though. I don't think that, you know, the handle fell off on accident. I think she ripped it off, blah, blah, blah. And I will just say, you know what? Let's get it taken care of this time. If it happens again, we'll maybe address it. But I prefer to spend the money to take care of the issue, to get it done with, to move on so I can focus on other things. And then, you know, if it becomes an issue again, then let's kind of take it hands on. And I think that is something that I would prefer to do, but maybe another owner wouldn't, as to like, what is this $200 charge? Why wouldn't you make them pay for it? Blah, blah, blah. So I don't like, I'm so glad I don't have the responsibility of, you know, other people. And yeah, I couldn't handle that frustration. I'm getting irritated just thinking about it.
Expectations up front is big. Totally agree with you.
And I don't like to disappoint people too. And yeah, that would be a really hard thing for me. We're going to take a short break, and we come back, we're going to talk about how you can change strategies from 2,000 miles away. Then we're also going to touch on bank financing.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, welcome back from our short break. Up first, we have changing strategies from 2,000 miles away. And then we're going to get into building banking relationships. So our next question is from Chewy Canales. I have a home in South Texas that I rented for the past 1.5 years long term. I want to try short midterm rental, hoping to see a higher profit. I'm a little more anxious because I'm 2,000 miles away, which may complicate things with me not being readily available. Do you have any tips? Should I even consider it? I will have to completely furnish it to start off the Airbnb. I have some savings, but I am also responsible for my primary home at the moment. So, Tony, I think this is a great question for you, because you started out investing, you know, out of state, long distance, doing long term. And then even though it wasn't the same property transitioned, you did transition to out of state, long distance, short term rentals. So maybe tell us a little bit about your experience first.
Yeah, both of my first long-term and short-term rentals were over 2,000 miles away. The first one was in Louisiana. I'm in California. If you guys know, actually, the first one I bought was a good deal. It was that second deal in Shreveport that that became so famous on these podcasts. And then my first short-term rental was 2,000 plus miles away in Tennessee. So, Chewy, at a high level, yes, it's definitely possible to be able to manage it remotely. But here's what I would caution you to do first. Is before you even think about investing capital, the time, the effort, the energy to turn this property into a, you know, you said it's profitable, right? To turn this profitable long-term rental into a short-term, do the numbers and the analysis first to see if it's even worthwhile for you. I've seen a lot of people who just think, oh, I have a long-term rental, let me just turn it into a short-term, and there's maybe not enough demand in that city, maybe the regulations don't support it. Who knows what the reason could be? So I think the very first step is understanding if it's even going to be profitable in that market. Ash, I know you've got a few short-term at this point as well, too. Like, what did your process look like to make the decision between long-term or short-term?
Yeah, so for me, I knew that the numbers would not work as a long-term rental, meaning that I was paying extra to have a land with the property. And that's where I had to run the numbers to make sure it would work as a short-term rental, because that's the only way I could purchase the property. So really doing a full market analysis was really the first starting point for me as to, okay, I'd like to buy this property. Long-term rental isn't going to work. I already know that because I already know this market. And then having to learn how to analyze a market for a short-term rental, because they're very different. Like a long-term rental, I'm looking at, are there jobs there? Where short-term rental, you're looking more of what's the attraction? Why is someone going to visit here and come here and stay? Or, whatever it may be, there's different ways to analyze the market. So that was the first initial step for me in turning these properties when purchasing them, saying, okay, this is going to be a short-term rental because the market could demand that where it couldn't a long-term rental.
Yeah, true. You say South Texas, but not sure where in South Texas exactly. But yeah, I think that's one of the bigger questions. And to me, kind of a telltale sign of whether or not there is demand in a market for a short term is how many listings are already there, right? Like if you look at your city, Chewy, and there's like 7 Airbnbs, maybe there's not a lot of demand in that market to support an 8th one, right? But if you look and maybe there's 100 or 200 or several hundred, it's proven that there's some demand in that market. So I think, Chewy, that would be my very first step. Now, in terms of the actual, like, can I do this from 2,000 miles away? Yes, absolutely you can. And I think something I see from a lot of rookie investors is they get a little emotional about the distance, as opposed to letting the math equation kind of dictate what the right move is for them, right? So like I'll ask people like, hey, what is your goal? Is your goal to have a property that's close in a city that you can walk over to or drive over to if there's an issue? Or is your goal to get the most amount of profit possible, right? And people usually giggle and say, well, it's the profit, right? So if that's the case, just build the team. Hire good cleaners, hire good handyman. If something breaks, call one of them over to go over there and fix it for you. So that's how we've managed it for ourselves and our business.
Yeah, I think one of the things with that too is when you're first starting out, it's building your team and finding out who can help you. So Tony, in your situation, like Chewy's going to have to find other people to help, because managing a short-term rental is different than a long-term rental. Setting up the furniture, is he going to have to fly out there, set them up himself? Or is he going to have the boots on the ground? So maybe you could just explain real quick for us as to your first short-term rental. What was the process you did to get it rent ready? And would you do that same process again? Or do you do that same process now?
Yeah, I'll give you both our first and one of our more recent ones. So our first short term was a cabin in Tennessee. We bought the property. And while we were in escrow, we found a recommendation for a cleaner from a friend of ours who also owned in that market. That cleaner had a recommendation for a handyman. So that's how we kind of found our initial team. Cleaner came from a friend, handyman came from the cleaner.
And hold on, Tony, I real quick there. When you say friend, was this somebody you knew from your childhood? Was this somebody you met on Instagram? Was this someone you met networking? Did you meet because you're real estate investors? Or was this just somebody you had known your whole life or known through
great
a friend,
question.
Actual friendship?
I met him at a meetup. Met him at a local meetup, and then we ended up bumping into each other at a conference a few months later, just like happenstance, and became friends from there. So yeah, it was very much a byproduct of networking. So he said, "Hey, I got this great cleaner." We actually reached out to his cleaner; she ended up being available, but she had a recommendation from someone else. But either way, it came from a friend of ours. So we shipped a bunch of stuff over to the property. Like our cleaner went through and said, "Hey, here are some things I think you need to purchase." And then I think the week that we went live, we flew out there. We stayed at the property for, I think, like 3 or 4 days. And, we just made a few trips to the local Walmart, kind of swapping out some things, replacing things, and really just making sure we knew what the property looked like. And that's how we set it up. So our cleaners and our handyman did a lot of the initial setup. And then we kind of went there to put the finishing touches. Now, this one was already an active short-term rental. So it was a little bit easier because a lot of the big stuff was there. Now, I'll give you a recent example of three arbitrage units we set up in a brand new city we'd never been to before with zero team, right? Didn't have anything in place. So, and we were setting up three units at one time. So we asked first the property manager of the building that we were doing the arbitrage in for a recommendation on a handyman. They recommended someone. So he was kind of our initial boots on the ground there. We ended up having to fire that person because he wasn't quite working out. And then we went into a local Facebook group and we were just searching for anyone that had mentioned the phrase handyman or cleaner, whoever. And we ended up finding a phenomenal guy there locally. And he ended up building out the rest of our furniture, setting everything up. And he became our cleaner on the back end. So I haven't seen inside of those units since we've taken them live. And it's all because we built out the team and he set everything up for us. So that's how we do it now, is we send it all over to the property, let them build it, and we trust them to kind of execute.
Tony, last question on this piece before we go to our last rookie reply here. But how are you setting that up that there's checks and balances? So you're hiring these people, and even though they become, you know, they're coming from a referral, how are you trusting them? How are you reviewing their work? Like, what? How did you know to fire the other handyman? And how do you know the other one is great if you aren't actually there at the property to see the performance?
Yeah, so great question. So I'll answer the one about how we had to fire the first guy first. It was just a lack of responsiveness. You know, we're asking for, hey, send us update photos of this, send us, you know, give us an update on this piece. And the responsiveness just wasn't there. Or we'd ask for the photo. He said, yeah, sure, I'll send it. And then, you know, we'd never get it. So it became pretty apparent to us that he wasn't going to be the one that worked out for us. So we let him go. Funny enough, he actually still has one of our locks at his property. I don't know if we ever got it back or not. But anyway, we found this next guy and he was just on top of it every single time. Like, he was pointing out stuff to us that we didn't even realize. He was like, hey, actually we need to re-caulk this bathroom or this bathtub because I'm seeing a little bit of this, that, and the other, or hey, I can fix this chip thing. Like, he was pointing out everything that he could with the property to give us the best chance. And he was just incredibly responsive. Anytime we needed him, he was on it. So you start to understand how people work as you start to go on this journey. And in terms of how we knew that everything was right, there's a few different things you can do, right? So in our situation, we ask for photos from our team whenever they do anything. That gives us a really good insight of what the property looks like, a video walkthrough as well. But you can also ask, like, you know, in this building, there's a property manager, have the property manager go through and walk the unit for you. Or if you're working with an agent, say you're buying a property in some other market, have the agent go through and walk it for you. So there are other ways to kind of get that proof that they're actually doing a good job.
Okay, moving on to our last question today from Kenyatta Donnelly.
Hi, Ashley and Tony. My name is Kenyatta Donnelly. I'm based in the Philadelphia area, but I invest in Baltimore, Maryland for the most part. My question is, a couple of episodes ago, Tony talked about Relay Bank and all of the benefits that it has for business owners and entrepreneurs in general. Personally, I have multiple accounts with Bank of America. It's who I banked with personally, and then I started putting my business accounts there as well. So I figured by keeping all my accounts there and they being a larger bank, there may be some benefits to me, like building a relationship, becoming a premium member, you know, having that longevity with them, and maybe that would help me in the future as I build my real estate business. I also have a couple of small accounts with some credit unions, but I was just wondering, is there any real benefit for me to keep my accounts with such a large bank as a rookie investor? Or does it make sense for me to move my money to a bank similar to Relay or a smaller bank that will help me get, you know, some of my deals funded as I continue to grow my business? I really appreciate all the work you guys do and this podcast, and looking forward to your answer. Thank you.
Okay, so I actually have a story that just happened yesterday with this question. So I love Stessa. And if you are a Bigger Pockets pro, you need to get linked up with Stessa because great benefits. But Stessa, and then there's another website that I use too that I link my bank accounts with. I've only ever used small local banks. So there's two in town that I primarily use, and the majority are at one of the banks. And I love this bank because one of the priorities to me is logging in one time and seeing all of my business bank accounts and not having individual logins. Okay. That, you know, that's like my top thing. So I've been using this bank for a while now and it's been fine. All of a sudden, in these two third-party softwares, I'm using Stessa and another one, I can no longer link my bank account to them. So the transactions aren't automatically uploading. And I've been contacting Stessa saying, I can't, get this to work. Here's the issue. And there was like two different logins. I'm trying to explain why it's not working. And they said, we're so sorry. It doesn't seem like your bank is compatible anymore. So I reached out to the bank. I called them and they just said, you know, hold on one second. Let me find out more information. A minute later comes back and says, I'm sorry, we don't support that anymore. We're trying to in the future again. And I was like, do you have a timeline as to when? She's like, no, I'm sorry. So I've worked with Baseline Bank before, and they're an online bank through Thread Bank. And Baseline is, you know, for landlords. They have a lot of features for landlords to use, and I've used them for security deposits. I went into Baseline. I switched one of my accounts over just to see the difference. I want to play with it, just like my general business account. And immediately, there were so many features, advantages, but also the customer service. To reintegrate that to one of the third-party softwares I was using, I needed a letter verification. Or if I would have went to my small local bank, I either would have had to go in person, wait for a bank manager to be available, sit at their desk, small talk with them, which everybody knows I am feeling uncomfortable with, and then wait for them to print me a letter on letterhead. Or I would have had to call, or I would have had to email and wait for who knows how long for it to be sent back to me. With Baseline, they literally sent it back to me, I think within an hour it was, with my credit verification letter, and I was able to add that new account into my third-party software. So I started reading more and more as to the advantages of using a bigger online, not even bigger, but an online banking system compared to an in-person one. And I really thought about it as, at least for my business bank accounts, when do I ever need to, like, what do I actually need a physical bank for? I'm not drawing cash that I need to go in and say, hey, I need a bag full of 50 G's because I'm going to buy a house. Give me cash, you know? So, and then, you know, you can always transfer it to a physical bank account you have. And so I'm thinking more and more that I'm actually going to be integrating all of my business accounts into Baseline because of the features that they have that are so much more friendly. Even a wire transfer, when I did a closing a little while ago, I had to go and sit in the bank manager's office, fill out all this paperwork for the wire transfer. You could at least used to be able to do it at the teller. Now they make you go in and sit with the bank manager and do it. And I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I couldn't even do it online. So there's definitely advantages of using bigger banks because they have better features, maybe even better support than, but there's also other ways your community small bank gives you better support too. As far as like building that relationship, every time I've done a commercial loan at one of these small banks, they always want me to have bank accounts there or to open another bank account with the entity I'm using, and they want all my deposits going in there. So if you're having deposits going in there, like rent checks, so your W-2 income, that is a huge advantage. And they look at that, and I've been able to negotiate maybe my commitment fee or, you know, the points I'm paying on the commercial loan. So that I see as an advantage. As far as residential, it's never really been that negotiable that it doesn't seem to make a difference if I'm using that or not. So Tony, I'm really, I've heard you talk about relay banking before. So I'm really interested in how, you know, building a relationship with that bank compares to using a really big bank, because I've never used Bank of America, or I've heard things that, like, a lot of investors will use Chase because of their private relations. But yeah, I'm curious your thoughts on the difference.
I think one of the important things to call out first is just the difference between like a banking partnership and a lending partnership. Banking is just like, hey, where are you storing your cash? Where are your debit cards based out of? Maybe your credit cards. You know, where are you running all the transactions in and out of your business? Lending is, who am I going to service my debt for my rental properties? Relay is a banking platform. It's not a lending platform. So Relay doesn't offer credit cards. It don't offer bank loans. It don't offer auto loans. Like, all they offer is the banking platform. So I can't go to Relay, although I have a great relationship with them, and say, hey, can you fund my next home purchase? Right. I do think that, you know, and I'm a little biased, but I do think that, Kenyatta, if you're thinking about the lending side of things, I personally do think that the smaller banks are probably a little bit better for that than the larger big institutions, right? Unless you're, you know, unless you're putting down, you know, Uber multiple millions of dollars into Bank of America, you're probably so small in their balance sheet. Like, why, you know, you know, how much are they really
at that point? You might as well go to a smaller bank and be one of the person. Be the person with the highest deposits.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, I don't know. I myself am very fond of the smaller banks for lending. And I do like Relay for all the reasons that Ashley said about it being an online bank first. Like, I can call Relay and talk to a real life human based here in the US. I can do everything virtually. You know, you talked about the letters you can get. I can download all that stuff from my bank. There's just so many cool things. And like, I used to have a Bank of America account and I literally closed it. I hate Bank of America's user interface. It's super old school, super clunky. Like, I'm just not a fan of Bank of America in general from that perspective. But yeah, I like Relay, but Kenyatta, I think the thing you're talking about more so is the lending. And for that reason, I would try and source maybe a local credit union either in your city or in the cities you're investing in to build that relationship.
Yeah. And like a couple more things to add too is the difference between because I guess we've gotten into three different categories here, the large banks, the online banking, and then the small community banks. And one thing too with the online banking is the interest rate. I have found that I don't know what interest rate you're paying, but like the one I just signed up yesterday for the business bank account, it's a checking account and it's paying 4.09%, I think it was. I use Wealthfront for my personal savings accounts, and that I think is like at 5%. And my community bank that I have that has my business accounts in it and my personal checking, I think that's at, I haven't looked, but it's probably like 0.1% or something, you know? But huge difference in the checking account percentage that you're getting on interest. And as you start to build multiple businesses and, you know, your cash may fluctuate, but they take that average daily balance and your interest rate, that could be a nice little, date out to dinner, that interest, you know, once a month. Okay, well, that wraps up another episode of Real Estate Rookie. We want to know, what was your favorite topic of today's episode? Was it the haunted house? Was it renovations? Was it setting up a property out of state? Or was it talking about banking? So if you're listening on YouTube, leave us a comment and tell us what was your favorite topic and what you want to hear more about. You're listening on your favorite podcast platform, go ahead and slide into mine and Tony's DMs and let us know which topic you loved and what you want to hear more about. My name is Ashley and his name is Tony. Thank you guys so much for listening. You can find our Instagram handles in the comment section below or in the description. Thank you so much for listening and we'll see you guys next time. The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals. Enter a few details about what and where you want to buy and boom, instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. There's free resources only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today. The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.